Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Patrick, tell me, do you ever think about leaving the planet?
Sometimes, Jim. When I see all the decomposing trees, I feel a little strange.
Yes. Isn't it a pity? Okay, Patrick, so this is exciting because we have a deal with certain patrons of the podcast, mm-hmm. right? Where they get to come on the show and they get to pick a topic and lead a discussion, whatever. And we talk about, we let them pick, right? Whatever
right.
they want to do, right?
It just costs money.
That's right. I wasn't going to get into all that right now.
No,
but
I'm
yeah.
kidding.
But anyway, go to patreon.com/suburbspod and you can learn all about that and how you can be on the show and pick a topic too. But generally, because the show is worldwide, the people are on the telephone or on the Skype or that kind of thing. And this is the first time we've had somebody live and in person. One of the patrons come here into the suburban basement.
I know. Right? I'm pretty excited about this, Jim.
So we welcome to the show Nick Scalera.
Hello, everyone. It's great
I'm
to
Mr.
be here.
Nick.
And by the way, the show is called Rockin' the Suburbs, and my name is Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
There we go. And, of course, Nick has been on before.
Yeah, he's been here before.
Yes, he's been here, right, for some...
We once caught the carpet on fire.
Here.
That's right.
He slept here for several nights,
we were smoking
actually.
Cigarettes during flying on week one, and we caught the carpet on fire. Or Nick did.
What?
And he paid for it. Anyway, Nick's
I don't believe
been here
any
before.
Of this. Okay. Yeah, right. So, so Nick, you've seen the basement, you've seen the records... When Patrick has back turned, you've taken records, right?
Yeah. Sure. Okay. Oh, yeah. I always bring a large bag when I come here.
That's right.
In case you're wondering why I have that shopping bag when I show up at the door.
And so, anyway, so this is it. This is Nick's chance to drive the show. I mean, he's done that before. But in this official Patreon capacity. Yeah. But before we do that, I do have to mention, speaking of Patreon... Again, go to patreon.com/suburbspod. We need to give a couple of shout-outs new patrons.
Oh, fantastic.
We do have a couple of new patrons.
All right.
Noah Crane
from
Lebanon, New Hampshire.
Nice.
Noah, thanks for helping us out.
Right.
And thanks for being on board. And
I think he's a descendant of the Ichabods of New Hampshire.
Is that where it was?
I don't know.
Sleepy Hollow, was that New Hampshire?
Oh, maybe.
Sounds right.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay, sure. Anyway, also, I think that's a fictional character. Yeah. So
did
sure.
I just make some sort of New England slur? I'm sorry, folks.
Anyway, the sticker's on the way, Noah.
That's right.
You get the patron sticker. And then also, Tom Jett of Sterling Heights, Michigan.
Oh, nice.
We are huge in Michigan, by the way.
Yeah, where is Sterling Heights?
I don't know.
I don't either.
It's in Michigan.
Outside
it's
got to
be out there.
It's
outside of Detroit?
Yeah.
Suburb? Okay, cool.
It's in the mitten part. All right, Nick, what did you want to talk about here on Rockin' the Suburbs?
So I'm going to talk about, I guess it was a couple of days ago, no, the 20th, October 20th, is the 30th anniversary of the release of On Fire by Galaxy 500. And for those of you who follow the episodes like I do, listen to all of them, we did talk about Galaxy 500 a year ago the 30th anniversary of today, and that was episode 471.
Yep.
And I just want to take this opportunity just to recognize that at that point, there were 471 episodes. All right? That was a year ago. These guys have, now we're up to what? What are you guys up to in the 700s?
Yeah.
And I just want to just sort of call out how remarkable that is. I work in media, and we talk about doing podcast series, and we plan and plan and plan, and we do 13 in a year. So just a shout out to these guys for letting us get together, bringing this community together, bringing guests on to do it. I mean, you get just a diversity of stuff that you can't get anywhere else. So
thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you very much.
We jam a Kano.
And now I'm here to annoy you for the next hour. Get that out of the way.
Wait, scratch that.
So Galaxy 500, I told Jim we're not going to go down. I only have 2 pages of notes. I don't have 12. So that's a good thing. And if you do want an introduction to Galaxy 500, I'd refer you back to 471. We sort of set up who the band is. Mm-hmm. On Fire is their second album. Just as a quick review, it's Dean Wareham, who's guitarist and vocals. Naomi Yang is on bass, also does some vocals. And Damon Krukevsky, I think I pronounced that right, is the drummer. So this album came out in October 1989. It was recorded at this place called Noise, New York. Mm-hmm. And one thing to mention about this album is that there's this producer for this album. His name is Mark Kramer.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many of folks out there were into big into the a label called Shimmy Disc in the late 80s. But Mark Kramer is one of those really bizarre characters in the indie music scene, hung around with Jad Fair and Half Japanese. And he was in a band called Bong Water, which I would you can imagine what that's like, right?
Yeah.
It's well named.
Mm-hmm.
But Mark is sort of, you know, the fourth member of Galaxy 500. He really has a big impact on this production. So when this album came out, you know, it's gotten a lot of, it's one of those albums that has a lot of critical acclaim, but in a very sort of specific place, sort of like the Pitchfork's list of the top 30 dream pop records.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was, they were very popular in the UK because the UK had a music press that covered American indie music with daily articles. In the US, not so much. If they played to 300 or 400 people, that was huge for them. So this album, though, is, I think, the masterpiece of their collection. It's extremely personally meaningful for me. Mm. This came out in my senior year in college. I had just met my future wife.
Wow.
We played this album a lot in the dorm room. And you know what? I think it's a very romantic album.
You might
disagree with me, but for folks who have time to give it a listen, it's worth trying to key into that sort of, it's a romance with an odd sensibility, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So Galaxy 500 is, I think, a timeless band. They are very rooted in music history. They're very much acolytes of the Velvet Underground, especially the third album. They are big music fans. Television's another reference to their music. And it sounds a bit timeless. It's fairly simple. There are not a lot of different chords.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, G, C, and D are very popular with Dean Wareham. They're simple. It's paced in a very deliberate way, but there's a formula that they stick with, and it's sort of like quiet explosions is one of the terms I've heard for it.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts slow often. There's only a few chords, but then it'll end in some guitar freak out, and there's some fabulous harmonies. Naomi Yang, who is a bass player, has a very distinctive style of playing bass. Damon Krukowski is kind of a jazz style drummer who paints in between the lines. So they create a very interesting sound. It's very unique. I don't think it's really, there's been antecedents and there's been things after it, but nothing really sounds like it. So we'll start, I'm thinking maybe just start with this first song off the album, which is Blue Thunder, which is a song that Dean Wareham wrote about a car. It's not very lyrically complex, but there's a feeling to it. And the feeling is, we've all been there. You get in the car, you're out in the road, you're looking at the road, and you're just like, I'm going. I don't know where I'm going, but I'm going. And I think that's really captured here. So why don't we start out with that? Give it a listen.
How it turns.
I mean, I don't know. So this is the thing. I'm just going to be out there with you. You either love Galaxy 500 or you hate them. I mean, it's your gut. And there's a quote that a journalist wrote that I'm just gonna read here because I think it really captures what's going on here. And this is actually from Pitchfork's top 100 albums of the 1980s, which sure. Galaxy 500 made Pitchfork's top 100 of the 1980s.
Yeah, that's a list.
But so this journalist says, a casual listen to On Fire yields little. The spastic vocals drive some crazy. The drumming constantly lags a quarter measure behind the already slow compositions. Every song has the exact same rhythm, which happens to be the first one every guitar player learns. But if you're wired in a certain way, Warham's falsetto flights on Blue Thunder and Snowstorm are the very definition of majestic. And I think that's sort of the falsetto is a thing. You either hits for you, it doesn't.
Yeah.
I was listening to this on the Metro on the way in today. I've heard it a gazillion times. I got something stuck in my eye. I had to not stop making eye contact with people on the Metro. It just hits me that way. I don't know why. And, you know, I bring this to the Rocking the Suburbs crowd to implore you to try it and see if it works.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, okay.
For sure.
It doesn't work for everyone. But it's just I think they're an example of three people who came together and had sort of a unique vision, and the three elements all work together well. They did it. They did their three albums. This is the masterpiece. And then they moved on.
Yeah.
and it is what it is. So
now, why do you see this as the masterpiece, Nick, among the three records?
To me, On Fire has more emotional power than the other two albums. The mm-hmm. first album is kind of it's a little bit more snarky. It's a little bit more sarcastic.
Mm-hmm.
It's stripped down a little bit.
Yeah.
On Fire adds two or three other elements that actually make a difference. One is there is actually an acoustic guitar in it in the
yeah.
background.
Yeah.
I think there are some effects. There's some saxophone that's added in the back. So they move the needle a little bit in complexity here.
Mm-hmm.
But I just feel like it has just a ton of emotional power. It's really, it just sets a mood in a way that I don't think a lot of artists are able to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've got that one note, but damn. For me, it's a great note. And it's just sort of a perfect distillation of a vision. And, you know, I'd also sort of bring out, if you get a chance, you know, look on, you know, on Twitter or on the website just to see the album cover is another. They were a very well packaged band as well.
Totally.
Naomi Yang is a graphic artist and a photographer. And if you look at the album cover, it's got this sort of very retro feel to it. The photography, there are liner notes on the back of it that
yeah,
we might want to talk about a little bit at some point. But it's the whole package. It's sort of retro and sort of not. I think it sort of stands outside of time, and that's why, you know, as I listen to it, I don't feel like it ages. I feel like it at the time felt like a throwback, but in retrospect, it just sort of feels pretty timeless.
Mm-hmm. Can we listen to a little bit of Snowstorm? I want to say that the stylistic leap forward from Galaxy 500s today to On Fire is that they could all play separately and define themselves, right? So on Snowstorm, you can hear that, right? Percussion, bass. Suddenly that bass in a trio is carrying the melody, right? And you're still playing the G chord, and you're still singing about, you know, something romantic. Waiting on a couch, watching the weather report. My girl's coming home, or my partner's coming home, and, oh, looks like they changed the forecast.
Right.
It's a beautiful thing. It is romantic.
I think it is. I'm very biased on that note, but you bring up a good point where they, you know, this is a band that's sort of in the indie style was completely self-taught. Naomi Yang was the cool friend that was hanging out, and they were Dean and Damon were looking for a bass player, and she's like, I'll play bass.
Yeah.
And you know, she goes to a store, and I think this gets back to sort of how they packaged and presented themselves. You know, Dean's got like an ES 330, you know, hollow body Gibson guitar that gives you that sort of rich sound. And Naomi went to buy a bass, and she didn't go buy, you know, Fender Precision bass, some big chunky thing. They found this hollow body Gibson bass that like the store couldn't sell, because no one in rock wants a bass like that. She's talked about before how the whole thing sort of like vibrates when you play it, you know, and it's got that rich, the sort of rich resonant tones that you hear in the bass. And her style is, it's kind of high up the neck. It's based on Peter Hook. She was a big fan of Peter Hook.
Yep. You can hear that.
And
yep,
you can sort of hear that, but Patrick's right. The three elements are very distinctive, and they come together, and it's a very unique mix. And, you know, even I did get a chance to see them live in 1989 at CBGB's, and it was my one and only time there. And so it's a very special memory. But, you know, they were great live, too. You wouldn't think it. I mean, they weren't proficient, but they just, those three elements came together, and even minus some of the Kramer production, all the elements were still there.
We'll talk about Kramer a little bit more, because I think that he was a guy that, if you think about Bongwater or some of the other bands he was in, it was very avant-garde, but yet he still loved the Beatles and like all that studio production, and he applied that.
He's one of those just bizarre figures of the New York scene that you can't really describe him. I mean, he used to, the members of Galaxy 500 were all kind of, they all met at Harvard. They were kind of effete intellectuals, and Kramer was like, let's get stoned, you know?
totally.
And he would often do things just to piss them off and see how they react. And, you know, and he was interviewed once at some point, and he said, you know, when they came to me with these songs, and they sought him out because he had produced some album that they had liked. But, you know, he's like, when they came to me with these like three chord things, they sounded kind of, and he uses this term that's not socially acceptable, but basically that they sounded really developmentally challenged in their approach to music, you know, but still at all, you know, once he sort of added into the mix, and he really let them go, and he didn't, it's not, there were a lot of these are recorded in one or two takes, which, okay, they're simple. I think this rhetoric around Galaxy 500 just being three chords and out is actually, you can say that a little bit about today, but when you get to Galaxy 500, and maybe we can hear at some point the end of the song, Tell Me. And Tell Me sort of starts out with this sort of whining, tell me one more time, you like the shoes I wear, blah, blah, blah. It's a romantic song. But there's just a feedback-drenched guitar freak out at the end that, you know, kind of kicks it into another level and shows that they had progressed as musicians compared to today. So So, you know, Dean Warham, I think, is actually a phenomenal guitarist. I mean, I think that there's he's not Jimi Hendrix, he's not Eric Clapton, but he's got a distinctive style, and that solo is not a rip roaring solo, but to me, what Dean has is taste. Mm-hmm. He's got incredibly great taste in music, and he also knows how far to go with a solo, how to keep it sort of contained, and how to also like sort of hit those emotional points. There's never too much, there's never too little. It's always kind of just right what he's doing on a guitar. And it's not, it might be on one string, that solo, but it just really works. And I think it's sort of an undervalued piece of the puzzle. And as Dean went on, in later years to form Luna, which became sort of more of a guitar kind of jammy band, Dean does get much more proficient at it, but I do like these solos in Galaxy 500 because they are simple but complex at the same time. Yeah. If that makes any sense.
It has sort of a Neil Young quality to it, I think.
Totally. Also reminds me of Bernard Sumner from New Order, where he takes a little melodic segment and just sort of plays it a little off kilter, but not too technically proficient.
Right.
Which is really important.
That's a very good reference. Mm-hmm. And they were big fans of New Order and Joy Division. And I will mention that in the same session that produced Galaxy 500 On Fire, they did a cover of Ceremony, which might be a good playout song, because Ceremony is maybe the best song Joy Division ever did. I think that Galaxy 500 does an incredible cover of this song.
Oh, they do.
I think they take it, they make it their own.
It's amazing.
They slow it down a bit. They add a bit of the whine and the falsetto. But I give them credit for taking a song like that on, and we talked about this, I think, before, when we talked about today, and Dean Warham, especially in Luna, he's just really great at covers. And I think the art of doing a great cover, you guys have covered this quite well in the past, but you can't just do it note for note. You have to add your own spin on it. You want to keep the essence of that song, but add your own unique piece to it. And I think that Ceremony is one of the best covers really I've ever heard.
Talk a little bit about It's a Pity, then, because I'm glad the other song on this.
So the last song on Galaxy 500,
right,
On Fire, is It's a Pity. And I will caution folks who are new to Galaxy 500, if you go to Spotify, the digital versions have three extra songs tacked on from the Blue Thunder EP.
Right.
So just a note on that, including Ceremony.
That's
which is
right.
Place to get it. Yep. But It's a Pity is a George Harrison cover from All Things Must Pass.
Right.
And to me, it's always
it's the last song on the record.
It's the last song on Fire. And it's take a sad song and make it sadder.
Yeah,
that's what Galaxy 500 does with It's a Pity, because George Harrison's version is actually a little bit more upbeat. And Dean and company take it to this place where it's just absolutely gutting. You just want to cry for all of humanity and all the terrible things we've ever done to each other. And it just goes on, and you cry and... but maybe that's just me. I've shed a lot of tears over this album. I'm not afraid to admit it. But I do think that once they find a groove in a song, they take it a long way. And sometimes it goes too far, but usually it's just about right. And I think, and Isn't It a Pity, I think, sort of intentionally draws out that feeling. And it ends the album on a note where it kind of should be for an album like this, right? So another fabulous cover on this album. And, I listened to a lot of music, not as much as these guys, but it's my favorite album, and I'm glad to have a chance to kind of talk about it, because it's right up there for me with the Beatles and the Flying Nun stuff and anything else. It's been a top album for me. It's been number one forever. Can't really explain exactly why. It's not the best. I will say it's not the best music ever made. but it really just hits this sort of groove that I think resonates with me personally, and it resonates with certain people and not with others, but give it a try and see if it works.
Okay.
Super inspirational for us, Wingtip Slope, because it was a trio.
Right.
They tried to separate their sound. They played a lot of covers. We thought that was really cool.
Was
and
group.
They were easy to play.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Good band to try to cover.
Yeah, without a doubt. Loved them.
I will just kind of end on this and just say that there's this other sort of great quote here that I think sums it up really well. And this was actually, this came from the Melody Maker in October. So this came out 28th October, 1989.
Okay.
This is a review of On Fire. It says, Galaxy 500 haven't gone anywhere since today. And by today, they're talking about the album before. Because there's nowhere for them to go. They're all washed up, come to rest at a beautiful composure in defeat. It's a Pyrrhic victory. Means triumph won at such a cost, you might as well have lost. Then Galaxy 500's music is the exact opposite. A statement of defeat that resounds like a glorious triumph. Let it bleed. I don't know. Critics have spilled a lot of words on this band, and I think there's something to that. I think that the music, it evokes a feeling and a passion in some people, and certainly myself. And I do also want to give a shout out to Andy Aldridge and Head Full of Wishes, which is the site. He is the Galaxy 500 super fan. He resides in the UK. He has been running a listserv since the 90s. I was on this listserv back in the day. I think at America Online I was connecting to this listserv, and it was a bunch of rabid people talking about Galaxy 500 and the offshoots that came later. He's the expert of last resort, and there was some controversy because some folks had tweeted in September that this album was 30 years old, and Andy said, no, I have the press release. He did. It is. So we are doing this literally a day after the 30th anniversary. I'm very happy to do it. I can't believe this album is that old, but then again, I'm old, so it all makes sense from a mathematical standpoint. But all I got to do is turn it on, and I'm right back in that dorm room in 1989. So it has some great memories. But, I know young people. I was at a Luna show recently. There was a lot of young people there, too. I think the music continues to not a lot of, not a lot of young people. But there were some, and that was notable, I think.
I was just going to ask one last question, which was, you discovered this record back in real time.
Right.
Compare, how it affected you back then versus today. Different at all?
It's very different. Music doesn't affect me at all in the way it did back. And part of it is age. Part of it is just being back in the late 80s, to find this music, it was a lot more active process. I remember being with a couple of my friends who we lived in a house together in college, and we were in the record store that was local to the college that had the alternative stuff. Had imports, had independent label stuff. And one of my friends picked up the Today album. He's like, this is a cool album cover. That was it.
Yeah.
We didn't know what was behind it.
Right.
And we listened to it and were blown away. And so when this came out in real time, I'd heard that this was coming. And I was waiting for this. And, unfortunately, we talked about this before. I was starting to buy CDs, so I only have my original CD. I wish I had the vinyl of this. Sort of bringing home a new release that you had been waiting for and popping it in and just, immediately, just being blown away. I hear stuff now that I love, but nothing hits me that way anymore. And I don't know, it might have a lot to do with the fact that you reach a certain point in your life, you have other priorities.
Right.
I had a lot of open time and space to be blown away by music back then.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, and in real time, it's an interesting, you're like, are they going to play anywhere? How do we find them? It wasn't hard. It wasn't easy to figure out where a band would play, let alone where you could get their recordings. So it was, it's a time and place. It's an enthusiasm that I still have, but not really nothing that I discover now kind of hits me in that way.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are young people today I sincerely hope there are young people today who are discovering new music. It hits them in that way, but I would probably argue that 30 years later, probably nothing's going to happen. It's just a point in time, it's a time and place and space thing. And it's sort of a normal human reaction, I think.
Yeah. And I would not discount your, idea of this as a super romantic album. I think when your heart is open in certain ways, man, you connect stuff.
Right.
And this album really is.
I think it is.
When will you come home? I mean, look at that song.
Right. I mean, and on the other hand, there are lyrics about Twinkies in it and other things. Gene always wrote some pretty bizarre lyrics.
Yeah.
And I invite you to go to the lyrics site and see how simple and bizarre they are.
And briefly, Nick, before we close out here on This Is Our Music, the third album. Just give a couple quick thoughts on that.
Yeah, This Is Our Music came out 1 year later, so next year we can do a 30th anniversary.
All right, sounds good. All right, never mind.
Save this.
Yeah, save that. Save that.
It
was the third album, then they all died in a plane crash.
I know. No, they took a drive from Bristol, Tennessee. Yeah. No, that was Hank Williams.
That's right.
The third album is, I love the third album as well. It's got one of the 4th of July might be one of their single best songs they ever put out.
Beautiful tune.
But it's not as strong wall-to-wall to me, and it's a little bit more varied, and it doesn't have that sort of that consistency of feel throughout all the songs. It's still a great album, still love it a lot. you know, the band split up soon after.
Yeah.
And there was, unfortunately, to this day, some acrimony over the band split up. They still are in contact. They have their own careers and their business partners. But these were three good friends
mm-hmm.
who were friends in high school and made this music together, had this intense experience, and then just bam. So to me, yeah. sort of the last album is always kind of tinged in the breakup also. And I'm sure folks have come up with plenty of examples of other bands where you sort of like, wow. like Let It Be, for example. Yeah, it's like, that's totally. Always sort of like the breakup and the dissolution of the band is always mm-hmm. sort of a part of the, how you feel about right. that record. So
there's also romance involved, but that's another podcast, Damon and Naomi.
Right.
Whole nother thing.
It was, it's difficult, I will say. And, you know, it would be hard to be in a band, a three-person band, when two of them are a couple. It was challenging. And it was one of the issues that came up. But, they gave us this. I don't care.
All those emotions into the music, and that's what I love about this band.
I think so. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Nick.
That's right.
Thank you, guys.
This year, I think, as a year-end subscriber for, what is it, a month on Patreon, Jam, $5, you get the Nick Scalera Galaxy 500 custom mixed it.
What?
Aren't you going to make that for us?
I don't know about this. What's a tape? I don't listen to tapes.
We make no promises on this. Yeah, what I would suggest is people go to patreon.com.
Oh, that's what I meant.
Yeah, right.
patreon.com/suburbspod. And there it spells out everything you can get for the different levels of support.
Right.
Forget
that. Not a tote bag, though.
No.
We don't have that yet.
No. I will go to the store and buy you a Galaxy 500 CD. Unlike these guys, they just buy records.
Video.
Like
yeah.
you'll get the same thing every month.
Is that what it is?
I'll just send you another one.
There you go. The Galaxy 500 Record of the Month Club.
That's right.
It's just three of them. Just rotates.
Yeah. Eventually, we'll get there.
Yeah.
All right. Now that's what I meant.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, let's get out of here.
Yeah,
but thanks, Nick. Thanks for this. Thanks for all your support. And if anyone else wants to be on the show, pick your own topic, as I mentioned, patreon.com/suburbspod. And also let us know if you're a fan of Galaxy 500 or you're just discovering for the first time from this episode.
Sure, man.
You want to give us your thoughts, you can call 612-440-1984 or email rock@suburbspod.com or find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at suburbspod. I should just put this on like a little save get or something like that.
Like a cart.
Yeah, cart. There you go. There you go. Just let that play.
Yeah.
All right, let's get out of here. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And I'm Nick Scalera.
Thanks, Nick.
Thanks,
and
Nick.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you guys later. French have a different word for everything.
I've read Plato. So great.